Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Todd Simpson, Chief Information Officer at USDA. Also joining us from IBM is Tim Stitely. You know, Todd, you mentioned in the last segment your digital transformation you're pursuing, and part of that's probably your mobile strategy, your mobility strategy. I'd like you to talk a little about how you're leveraging mobile solutions, and are you expanding in enterprise mobile services?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the very first initiatives that I executed on when I joined the FDA in 2015 was a Choose Your Own Device program, where we basically stood up a mobile device management infrastructure and then offered our customers the choice, tablets and cell phones. So they can choose between iPhones and Androids, and we have tablets and laptops. So that's all being served to our customers through a catalog of services. And then we're working to refine that catalog of services to make it much more Amazon-like, shopping cart, supervisor approval. It comes out of the budget, the end. A phone gets delivered through line of service, and it's all service oriented. So that's kind of where we're going now with respect to mobility. The Choose Your Own Device or CYOD program was one of the staples of our mobility program. The notion of work isn't somewhere you go; it's something you do, and you can do it from anywhere. So what we've now done now that we've got these phones out, and I think we have close to 10,000 phones deployed to date. Different flavors ranging between BlackBerries, iPhones, and Androids. And of course, we have a lot of tablets in the field for our inspectors, things like that. But we're also releasing VDI, Virtual Desktop Interface, so on an Iron Key flash drive. So our users are going to be able to, from basically any kiosk anywhere in the world, at a hotel, a kiosk, boot into the FDA environment securely. We're very proud of that. That's a huge staple of our mobility program. And we're also trying to enhance our support structure with the introduction of IDLE, but also expanding. So we want to make sure we do proper service transition. When we stand up a service now, we make sure that the help desk is informed so that they can do optimal tier one remote support. So that's one of the other, you know, we can't just say, let's have a mobile workforce, but we can't support that mobile workforce. So
switching gears a little bit, it's been said by many that as we come into the 21st century, one of the newest assets or richest assets that there will be is data. On that or in that light, how are you working towards putting a master data management approach in place at the FDA and the governance model that you're looking at to do so?
Thank you for that question. It's a great question, and we've been working very, very hard to define that data backbone at the FDA. Earlier, when we talked about the challenges, I said interoperability and system duplication, and I mentioned culture as a challenge. But usually, I say data. But I think that, you know, I'll talk about data now. I knew that we were going to have that later on. From a data perspective, we brought in Carnegie Mellon, their software engineering institute, to do an assessment of our data. And they looked at our master data management methodology, and they put together basically a gap analysis from where we are now to where they, you know, think we need to be. Now, that think we need to be came with a lot of input from me and the scientific community and the IT folks and the customers. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at our data in a different way as an asset. And we've set up a data governance advisory board. And we're hiring a chief data officer. That's another thing that we're doing. And we're trying to develop data standards so that we can basically develop that data backbone. But we're also at the same time putting in place those MDM tool sets, you know, and not just, you know, the SAP pieces, you know, the analytic pieces and the management pieces, but the security pieces like the data loss prevention. So it's a comprehensive puzzle that we're trying to solve data-wise. But I will say we do believe that that we're on the path to do some really good stuff. And we've got some really good tools, you know, for the predictive modeling and against the adverse event data, you know. So I think that we're positioned to be well informed. to protect the American public.
Well, speaking of protection, I'd like to talk about protecting your systems and infrastructure from cyber threats. So could you give us a sense of what you're doing to enhance the IT security across the enterprise? Yet what are some of the major challenges you're facing? What's progress to date?
Okay. Well, so the security posture of the FDA, I think, is improving daily. When I arrived there, we were in the middle of a GAO audit that was initiated by the Energy and Commerce Committee. And they released a fairly unfavorable report about a year after I arrived based on that audit. And we engaged with industry experts to put together a remediation plan. And I'm proud to say that we have successfully remediated all 15 of their programmatic findings, and 95% of the weaknesses that they identified. And I get a dashboard every single day where I'm watching the progress of this remediation. And more importantly, I think that we demonstrated to the Energy and Commerce Committee our willingness and our eagerness to partner with them to really turn things around. So I also changed the leadership of my I hired a new chief information security officer. He's a phenomenal guy. His name is Craig Taylor, by the way. And we also stood up a systems management center, which ironically, it won a CISO 50 award, which we're receiving in May of this year. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited about that. But the system management center is an integrated center where we brought the engineering arm in. So we have basically no downtime between the identification of a problem and the resolution of a problem. We don't go in between anyone, and it's fully integrated with our help desk. More importantly, what we're finding is like the CDM toolset that we're implementing, it's not enough for us. Okay. So it's phase one of CDM, but we had to actually go out on our own and find toolsets that could look at our data that's in the cloud, because I think we outpaced CDM. Now I'm saying that a little bit with a little bit of arrogance, but you know the departments. Yeah, I think a lot of agencies are grappling with this. They have data in the cloud, and some of the traditional tool sets that are identified in that CDM the tool set just don't do it.
Yeah. So. You know, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the cloud specifically. I think you mentioned the scientific computing program, but I want to delve into that. And what I mean by what are you doing to better integrate FDA's scientific computing program into your overall enterprise architecture?
That's great. So my director of innovation is also working with, we have a scientific computing board where we meet with the scientific community. And it is, you know, the scientists have very special platforms, very special requirements. And you know, my knee-jerk reaction upon entry at the FDA was just to look at everything and say, these are just requirements. There's no difference between an accounting system and a scientific computing system. But I've learned to kind of give up on that a little bit and to see the value in that specialization. So what I've done is I've dedicated a resource from my senior leadership team to that scientific community. They have a voice, and I'm very, very responsive to their needs. There is a scientific computing network that was at the eye of the GAO audit, and they found some vulnerabilities on it, and it gave me a chance, I think, to bridge some relationships with that scientific community. And what I found is that they're actually very pliable. They're very willing to work with you. They're concerned about the security issues just like I am. They're not just, you know, throwing caution to the wind to solve some problem. They're thoughtful, responsible, hardworking people, and I feel like it's been an honor to work with them and to solve the problems with them in a collaborative way. That's how I would describe that situation.
So looking at, as we go deeper into the 21st century, roles and positions are changing. Jobs today are different than they were before. From a workforce readiness perspective for the future, I'm going to break this into two pieces or put a statement there and then you can respond to it. But from a workforce readiness perspective, what do you see the greatest gaps are within the FDA staff? What investments are you making? I heard a study recently that said that in the future, you know, the millennials will have 7 jobs in their lifetime, 5 of which don't exist today. So that's a little bit more futuristic, but in the real time, near time, you know, so kind of looking at it that way, we always have to be retooling our staff. Yes. You know, what type of investments are you doing to bring your workforce ready for the future?
Right. So I've one of the efforts in the strategic plan was a role alignment activity where we methodically went through every single role and made sure that it was aligned and that we what is this person doing and what should they be doing. And then we did, you know, the traditional secondary, tertiary, you know, who's the backup to this backup to this backup. So kind of a little bit of a succession planning. And we've collected all that information in a database. So that's one of the things that we've done to start with, from a workforce management standpoint. And of course, we have training baked into everybody's PMAP. But what I'm seeing is the job of the engineer, the job of the you know, with the emergence of the cloud, we're shifting more from a technical to an administrative. I need contract management more than I need engineering almost anymore. And I need customer-centric marketing type people that are really good at communication. And I don't need someone to call a database for me. I need somebody that can manage the cloud environment where those databases live. And, you know, and so it's kind of that I think is the biggest shift that I'm seeing in the skill set. That business acumen is becoming so important. And I'm going through that same shift too. I used to walk into a room and say, well, that's not an IT problem. That's a business problem. I don't do that anymore. I walk in and I just say, I'm here to solve problems. And, you know, there's an element of IT to every problem. But there's an element of HR to every problem, and there's an element of procurement to every problem. And if you're really going to add value, you've just got to come in with a solutions-oriented approach. And that's really, I think, what I'm looking for. Dynamic, don't define yourself in a job and say, I'm an engineer. I think if you put yourself in a box like that, you're gonna hurt yourself. But we try not to do it as well. And I think the project managers are very, very important too. But as I'm talking through this, I'm thinking the cybersecurity, I can't get away from that, you know, that vigilant position, where you've got that.
Yeah, that skill set, yeah. So, you know, to pick up on Tim's point as a follow-up, you know, you won't realize the vision you've laid out in your strategic plan without a clarity of mission that's communicated clearly and without leadership at all levels of your organization specifically. So, you know, what are you doing to build a strong and healthy leadership culture? You mentioned succession planning, but I'd like to talk about recruitment and retention.
Okay, so I've built a senior leadership team, and I'm very, very proud of my senior leadership team. Very trusted, strong group of people. And what I've done is I've broken their roles down, and I started with functional alignment of the business. So everybody has a swim lane, and I kind of broke free of that mentality where we had a shoulder tap. You know, I have a problem. You have to know Jim or you have to know Bill to get your problem solved. Everything is very process oriented now, and I think that's the key. It's in the processes. So I don't want my customers to have to know who to call. I want my customers to be able to call one number and to get a consistent response. And I want my organization almost to be like a glass of water, that if you take the ice cube out, it just flattens out again, where we have pools of experts that can solve problems instead of experts that are dedicated, so that every time you stand up a new system, instead of building a new team to support that system, you can leverage an economy of scale approach and maybe not build your team with every new endeavor that you take on. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I answered your question there, but...
So building on that, and you've talked about this as certainly one of the pillars within your strategic plan, and that is customer satisfaction. And I think part of what you just described lends to how you've achieved that. But is there more that you're doing to be responsive to your end users to make sure they're getting the services that they need to fulfill the mission?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the greatest things that I found when I came into the FDA was that they had a really sophisticated chargeback model in place. So they had done a really good job of defining the lines of service and the cost drivers. And we were billing our customers under this chargeback model. And we've matured it a lot over the last 2 years, and we're going to continue to mature it. Part of that evolution is to develop service level agreements. So one of the things that I'm giving to my customers is guaranteed response time so that they know when to expect it. Right now, we don't have service level agreements. And we do a really good job. I mean, we have internal service level agreements, which we do a good job of meeting. But I want to give my customers a service level agreement. I want them to be able to see on a dashboard where the pizza is and if it's in the oven or if it's in the car on the way to their house. And so I think, again, it's transparency. It's having a really sophisticated but easy to understand service catalog with easy to understand service level agreements, and that my customers understand what the expectations are, what their expectations are, and what my expectations are. You know, if we ask a customer to put in, a form 10 days before their new employee starts and they wait until the day before, well, clearly that's not something I can be accountable for. But when everybody follows the prescribed processes, it should work. And my goal is to provide consistent and repeatable results every single time. Without that consistency, I'm never going to be able to gain the trust of my customers. So one of the things that I'm doing is we created a walk-up kiosk, for example, outside of our innovation lab. And it's positioned right outside of our hoteling space. For example, this is just one example. I'm trying to make it easier for my customers to get IT support. And we also just rolled out a new trouble ticket system, which is idle compliant. Our prior trouble ticketing system was not idle compliant, so we could only do problem management. Now we can do problem management and request management. So it's a big deal now because I'm offering services like choose your own device. These aren't problems. When somebody wants a new phone, it's just a request. And so we've now built a pathway by which we can deliver services more efficiently. We've invested a lot of money into the queues, but more importantly, we're watching everything and we're doing the trend analysis on, you know, those issues that are really impacting our customers, and we're getting ahead, I think, of those problems. Now, some things that we still have to get better at. You know, we still interrupt business when we have maintenance because the infrastructure is built on a high availability model. And so we're trying, with the emergence of the cloud, to bring more DR into that high availability model. And we want to bring more failover into our maintenance cycles so that we don't impact our customers, so they don't know when we're doing maintenance anymore. And, you know, when those applications that are in the cloud, we don't know when they're, we know when they're doing maintenance, our customers don't know. That's got to be the same standard. I would say the cloud should put us out of business. That would be my feeling on it. So either we have to step up and provide services on the same scale, scope, and level that the cloud service providers and the private sector vendors are providing, or we're going to get replaced.
What are the characteristics of a successful CIO? We will ask Todd Simpson, CIO at FDA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.